quarantine.
There you go. Potpourri. We're enjoying the potpourri.
Yes, we are.
The potpourri, the smell, the whiff, the waft. I always love that term, waft.
Waft?
Me too. It's a good word.
Waft, yeah. It's, you know, it's just like...
I like the term aroma has a nice count.
Aroma.
Aroma has good. A nice up and down.
There's a lot of there's a lot of springtime flowers like right now, so it's a lot of blooming, a lot of itchy eyes. Do you guys have allergies? I inherited Dad's allergies. Holy shit.
I have allergies.
I have very mild allergies. I'll get like sniffles, and my eyes might be a little red or burny, but I do not have rough allergies.
I wake up with itchy eyes every morning.
The past month. I have a regular routine where, you know, we're limited on how much Claritin D you can buy every month.
Yeah,
when we run out, I go and I purchase another 15 pack, and I'm on 24 hour Claritin D as often as I can take it. So yeah,
there you go.
That's the stuff that works on me too. The acetaminophen. That stuff. That's the only thing that works.
You limit the supply of the packets of single, you know, serve Claritin D. So freaking stupid. So that people can't do crystal meth. How freaking dumb is that?
It's pretty dumb. Yeah.
I mean,
I can go to the alcohol supply store right now and buy 10 cases of alcohol. Yeah. Nobody blinks about that. It's just freaking dumb.
Oh, yeah.
Have you watched Tiger King? Don't you understand the effects of meth and how it can fuck you up too bad?
I have watched
an episode and a half of that, and I don't think I can bring myself to watch it
anymore. I am the only person that hasn't watched this thing. I listened to the podcast about it,
It's a collection of nightmares is what it is, dude. It is so insane.
Is that why people love it? Because it's just so absurd?
It starts off just as kind of like this, we're going to do a documentary series about this weird society of people and how they all, they all keep big cats and they're all kind of like on the fringes and all are a little obsessed and a little crazy. And then it turns so dark so fast. And then you look back on it and you're just like, oh my gosh, these people are crazy from the jump, but they seemed harmless, but they're really not.
There are
levels of crazy, obviously, but there is like all of these people seem to have the capability to do anything. They're like sociopathic. Mm-hmm.
So I haven't watched the show, but like I said, I listened to the podcast. I feel like the podcast is called like Over My Dead Body or something like that. It's about Joe Exotic. Yeah. And so I know the story, and it's definitely crazy. Do you think, can we do some like pop psychology for a second and say, like, are people who are drawn to like taking care of big animals like this, do you think that makes them crazy, or do you think they were crazy already and then they just went
to? You have to have a certain personality. I wouldn't say defect or flaw, but a certain personality trait that draws you to the fascination of being in proximity all the time to something that can literally kill you,
right? Like, you're always kind of just riding that.
I don't
know
if it's a danger fetish kind of thing.
You don't think so?
No, I think it's a. You're wired in a certain way.
Yeah.
To be obsessive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you land on a thing that you're exposed to, and then you get an endorphin sort of feedback loop on it because of your you're wired for obsessiveness.
Yeah.
And then you land on that thing that feeds that, whatever it is, that endorphin. And then your wiring then leads you to, I am going all in. Yeah. I am rearranging my entire universe around that thing. I think it's necessarily fear.
I think that there's definitely the idea that these are very powerful animals.
Yeah, you're drawn to the power, and
you are not the top of the food chain when they are around. I feel like that is a consideration, and that is a twinge. I agree with you in terms of the endorphins and kind of their that reality definitely is there, and it's an obsession. It becomes an obsession, or you have a natural proclivity to be obsessive. But I absolutely think that it has something to do with the fact that these are powerful predators. It's not necessarily you're constantly afraid, but you're constantly fascinated. Like they are always engaging.
Well, and you're also kind of like you're walking up to something that other people are afraid of. It was sort of like that's got to be like a big ego boost for you. Is like, look at how comfortable I am around this thing that everyone else is like timid to walk towards. Yeah. Like you are the one that they won't attack. I mean, in some, they can attack you, but it's sort of like, oh, look at how comfortable I am around this.
Part of like the first or second episode, right? It one of the cats bites off the arm of one of the.
Oh yeah, that happens with the pine cat
workers.
And you learn later on, and I'm spoiling something very minor for you, but that person does not stop working at the park.
I got far enough where she just went back to work.
Yeah, she gets her arm bitten off. Well, I mean, you find out later she actually starts. They start to identify. I think. The pronouns they want to use are they. They continue to work at the park after being severely injured by something that they take care of.
Right? Yeah, see that. I mean that like an accident like that happens to me, and I'm good. Like I'll move on to other.
See, part of me doesn't even want to classify it as an accident because this is a wild animal.
Definitely not an accident.
It is something that is designed to eat things that are smaller than it.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, like, that's not an accident. That is evolution.
Not domesticated. It is not domesticated.
Well, it's sort of like, oh, man. I mean, we're getting into the weeds a little bit here, but it's like really interesting. And I think that's the fascination is like, they are beautiful. I think tigers are beautiful. Incredible. But they're scary. I don't want to go in a cage with one. I don't want to pet one ever.
I don't like house cats. I love big cats. Like, but yeah. I don't want to be in a. Whatever zoo I go to, wherever I want to find the big cats and I want to go see them.
Yeah, they're
I
really
want to.
Yeah.
And if I were to ever go to Africa, I would absolutely want to have an experience where I'm like,
oh yeah, going on safari.
Can I see lions and all that stuff in the wild? That would be so much fun.
Yeah, yeah. Safe in your car, away from them.
Well, the reality is, dude, that they're 400, 500 pounds. If they wanted to get into the car, they would figure it out.
They would get into the car.
I mean, what is the line from Jaws to describe a great white shark? You could easily apply it to a tiger or a lion. This is a miracle of evolution. They are designed to eat things.
Eat, swim, and make baby sharks.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like tigers are the same thing. They will come after you and they will eat you.
There's been a lot of people in pandemic times who are equating the mayor from Jaws as the mayor in Florida who keeps opening up the freaking beaches and stuff. It's like I think those memes are so funny. It's like
it's like refusing to acknowledge the reality. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Also, hey, we are the Brothers Geek, and this is our podcast. This is episode number 134.
You're very shouty, man.
I know I'm loud. I'm sorry.
Everybody can hear you. You're just very shouty.
I'm sorry.
Andrew's a sensitive soul.
I am a very sensitive soul. It's Sunday morning, man. I'm relaxing.
This is. I come in hot. April 5th. Excuse me.
Yeah, I was going to say. Get us to the end of quarantine. That's what
Patrick.
What episode number is this?
134.
100%. 134.
And we're done with our Picard one shots. Well, this is going to be we're calling it a potpourri episode of all different kinds of things we're watching and doing in quarantine.
Mainly because the brothers are smelling bad today because we're in quarantine.
We are quarantined.
Yeah,
things go. We were talking about a little bit about grooming before we turned on the recording.
Yes.
I I mean, I still keep a regular schedule where I try to, I bathe every morning pretty much before I like sit down and go to work. Cause I mean, I've been working from home for almost a month now. Christopher, you still been going into the airport because, you know, that's part of it, right? Or are you not going into the airport
but
anymore?
I'm definitely limiting my going into the airport. And my answer to that question about do I do regular grooming is if I do not run that day, I am very unlikely to take a shower.
That's interesting.
Brush my hair. Do any of that? Yeah.
Well, I haven't shaved in like 4 days, which really isn't, you know, bad because I can barely grow a beard. I do have a little bit of scruff. Ashton was like, she's like, it's noticeable. It's been like 3 or 4 days, and it's kind of scratchy.
Wow.
I'm like, I haven't shaved since Wednesday afternoon, probably. It's a little scratchy.
It was momentous. Today, my grooming regimen involved taking a clipper to my head. So
that's the thing too. It's like watch all these movies about the end of the world, and we see people going out with like guns and rifles and all this stuff. But like the stuff you forget is like, hey, that guy has to cut his own hair. Guy's got to like go find like.
Well, that's always the funny part of like you see.
Does that guy have like a roll of toilet paper?
For like zombie shows where you see women and like they're in tank tops, but they have like perfectly shorn like armpits.
Oh yeah,
you know, and their eyebrows are plucked. You know, all that stuff, and it's like, if you really in the end times, I mean, are women going to be shaving their armpits?
No, they are not.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
They are going to be hairy.
That is exactly what's going to happen. If it's truly a pandemic, that's when you know things have really crossed over. Women will stop shaving their armpits.
I mean, one of Hannah's friends mentioned to me the other day, she was saying that she shaved her legs for the first time in a couple weeks only because she got sick of like she got used to having shaved legs, and then now that it's like pandemic time, she like let go, but then like she started to feel gross that she had hairy legs, she said to us.
Oh no, dude, I find it uncomfortable to have facial hair. Like I don't enjoy like I feel like my face gets greasy. Maybe I just don't know how to do the upkeep.
I've definitely gone to full beard. I was with goatee for a bit, but I've definitely gone back to full beard because it's a pain in the ass to keep shaving it every day. So I'll keep it groomed. I'll keep the beard groomed, but I'm definitely full beard these days.
Friend of the show, Chris Ryan, I was talking to him on video chat the other day. He shaved his beard because he didn't want to touch his face. His beard was making him touch his face.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
And so he trimmed it up. And he looks like a goofy fucker without a beard for sure.
I doubt that. Well, see, the problem is that's not going to stop him from touching his face, right?
Right. Yeah.
He's still going to touch his face. So.
Yeah.
I hear that the CDC, if you're going to be going out into public, they're stating that you should be wearing
recommending masks. Yeah.
I've been doing that for over a week already.
The mayor of LA has been kind of on the forefront of that stuff.
It's more not for like my thought about the face mask was not for me or the breasts because like how can I measure that? But what I can measure is when I'm wearing the mask and I'm out, I'm touching things, and then now I can't touch my own face.
Yeah,
and so it's like that's helpful for me. And like, could we talk about like that person right next to me having the disease and then the mask stopping me from getting it? I don't know about that. That's a lot of like, who knows? But the
Rona.
Yeah.
Depends on your mask. If it's just a cloth mask, it's really not going to stop.
Right.
You from getting this, it.
It's a I'm wearing a medical mask. Yeah. I'm wearing a medical mask, but definitely stopping me from like touching something. I think that's the biggest risk is like I walk into a grocery store, somebody has it and it's contagious, but they're not showing any symptoms. They touch this thing and then it lives on that plastic piece of whatever for days. And then I come in, I touch it, and then I touch my mouth, and then now I have it. And it's sort of like, That's the biggest thing for me.
I've been thinking about all those things.
It's yeah.
No, it's you know,
definitely
new concerns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay. So in this pandemic time, we've been doing a lot of binge watching at home. Not a lot of theater going, obviously. Not a lot of grooming. So I would like
just
to talk
enough about, so we don't smell.
I'll admit
to you guys right now, because I wasn't around people for days on an end, because you know, that's just life now. I live alone. I experimented with not wearing deodorant.
Oh.
Yeah, don't do that. You smell. If you don't wear deodorant, you can start to smell yourself, and I smell bad. Like I pin out and I smell funky. I smell funky if I don't wear deodorant.
So you just have to buy some potpourri, Andrew, and put it right next to you. Yeah, and I put it throughout your house.
And clearly, and burning candles and stuff. But that's just, it's so I didn't wear deodorant for a stretch of a few days, and I'm like, geez.
I've done the same thing, Andrew. And yeah, my armpits
smell.
It's not good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like you're not like stinky. Like, if you stick your nose in your armpit, you're obviously going to smell the stuff. But like, if you didn't do that, would you smell it? Would you? You have a very sensitive sense of smell. So.
I have a very sensitive. I can literally smell someone smoking a cigarette like 50 feet. My neighbor above and across from me smokes cigarettes, and if I have my sliding glass door open and they are on their patio smoking, I can smell them smoking cigarettes.
Andrew's,
and they're 50 feet away.
Andrew has Wolverine sense.
I was just gonna go there too.
You have Wolverine senses, but none of like the benefits. Like,
exactly.
I don't heal very quickly at all, and I rather ungracefully. But yes, yeah. No, I can smell a cigarette from 50 feet away. So I'm sure that other people may not have been able to smell me. But I could definitely smell myself.
Who cares? You're in your house. Like,
it just doesn't feel clean. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel clean. Anybody else's hands getting super raw from all the extra intense hand washing?
Yes. My hands are very dry.
Yeah. They feel weird. Yeah.
I have been using mom's homemade hand sanitizer. That's been a good benefit. So
That's good.
Oh, homemade. Well, we got, that's the thing is like some of these random things have, you know, you can't find sanitizer, so you have to make do with mom's homemade.
Yeah.
So we definitely like got a bottle and have been hoarding it. The one bottle of sanitizer.
You're rationing it.
We're rationing hand sanitizer and toilet paper. Even though the grocery store I've been going to had some toilet paper yesterday. They finally started to get some back in people, and the grocery store actually is starting to get more restocked. Like
when they're limiting, they're limiting how many you can buy too.
Yeah, one per person.
It's so stupid.
The grocery stores that I've been going to, everything is pretty much back on the shelves except dry pasta. Because Dad wants to bake. That's how he wants to pass the time.
Uh-huh,
so he's been hankering for egg noodles, which I haven't found in like 2 weeks.
Oh yeah.
And flour. He wants to bake banana bread, and
he was telling me that yesterday when I was on the phone with them that they want me to buy flour and ship it to them.
Yeah, no, I have not found flour at a single shop in two and a half weeks.
That's crazy. Well, there is a thread on Instagram of people who are what's it called? It's like stay at home bake or whatever, or bake the bake off, stay at home bake off. Something like that. So people are baking. Like, they're bored. I've been baking banana bread too. I've been substituting a few things. Like, I'm gluten free, so I have gluten free flour, and then I substituted sugar for dates. I've been like making dates and then chopping them up, and so I made my own banana bread. It's the texture is off, but the flavor is great. Like banana, delicious.
That's what I found with someone made me gluten free cinnamon rolls once upon a time. A friend who has celiac disease, and they tasted pretty good, but it was not the texture of bread.
You just have to look past it. Like it's something that, like, to me, it's like it's something that we got used to, like flour,
or you use the regular recipe, Patrick.
Yeah. Well, I'm not gluten intolerant. I don't feel the need to change my diet because I'm not gluten intolerant.
All right, all right.
I cannot enjoy things that I can make the choice as an adult to not have to change just because, you know, gluten, quote unquote, is, you know,
poison.
It's not poison.
It's not poison. Poison me. Our entire civilization, Pat, human civilization is grounded upon the eating gluten, dude.
It really is.
Yeah.
That's not an overstatement.
Have fed themselves.
We have evolved to where we are today because we started eating gluten.
Yep.
All right.
It's true. Farming led to all of this.
Yes,
we farmed wheat, which is you make flour from.
I could continue this argument with the stuff about the genetically modified wheat that we've been eating since the 1950s. Oh, but I'm not going to go that deep into the discussion because
GMO is science, dude.
Yeah.
You're what? Okay, dude.
Anyways, okay, so Disney Plus added Onward to their streaming service, and I saw it in theater.
It just came out in theater like four weeks ago.
We live in a crazy time, man.
Friend of the podcast, Kristen, says hello. Oh, daughter of the podcast, Kristen, says hello.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi. And wife of the podcast, Susan, says hello.
Hi, Susan. Oh, yes.
Did everybody sit down and watch Onward together last night at your house, Christopher?
Not what everybody. Everybody that currently lives in this house did, yes.
Ah, okay.
I and Susan and Kira.
Yeah?
Yes.
What was the consensus on Onward?
We all enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
So Christopher, I would like your take on there's definitely some overt like D&D like references throughout the thing.
Yes.
And being a person that like legit played D&D in the 80s, legit guy, and all the little obviously the
D&D OG.
D&D OG. They don't call it, what do they call it? Quests of Yore or whatever?
Quests of Yore, yeah.
And there's definitely like here and there like segments of it, and I'm wondering what's your thought on that part of it? Like how'd you feel about their take on and the gelatinous cube and all that stuff?
I love the use of it as it is like a historical record. The universe that is created in this movie is like the fantasy universe, right? The Lord of the Rings style universe, sort of very that kind of universe, right? But then I just love the idea of no spoilers, but I love the idea that the evolution of that universe is it leads to sort of those types of characters, fantastical characters, evolving to modern times.
Yeah.
They had magic and then magic fades because science sort of takes over and you have electricity and modern cars and freeways and sort of a facsimile of our
cell
world.
Cell phones and
all of that. Yeah. Cell phones, the whole deal. And then the idea that a D&D style game, or Gloomhaven is my current sort of reference point, that style of game is really a distillation or an evolution of the mythology of the old world.
Yeah.
And that it's grounded in fact, and that elements of it are the magic spells that are in the books that the wizards use in that world. They are real spells, all of that. I love that idea.
Patrick mentioned the gelatinous cube, and I really didn't understand that joke. What is that joke?
Oh my god. It's gelatinous cube is one of the iconic Dungeons and Dragons monsters you fight. When you first start,
it's really hard to kill.
Yes.
And it murders you. It
fucks you up.
That sounds
so perfect that they use gelatinous cube. I remember.
We're outliers. Even I didn't have any idea what that meant. Like,
Chris Ryan and I have talked about the gelatinous cube. Like, it's sort of this.
What percentage though of the audience watching that movie will understand that reference though?
It's a deep cut. It's so perfect because gelatinous cube is a core creature that you would encounter in some of the earliest dungeons that your initial character party would meet inside a dungeon. So, you would run into goblins and kobolds and maybe a troll. Trolls are tougher. But then there was always the, oh my God, we're in this room and holy shit, it's a gelatinous cube. And you would all freak out. Because it was such a pain in the ass to fight.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's so good.
That is hilarious.
We looked it up. Kira and I looked it up in the monster manual that I have for Dungeons and Dragons. It's in there, and that shit messes you up if you don't know how to fight it.
That's so funny.
Yep. Yeah, you got to hit it with fire, everybody. Fire is the trick.
It will dissolve your shit.
It'll dissolve. It does acid damage to you. It's just a giant green cube of death.
I remember playing,
and it grabs you too. Like if it attacks you, like one of its attacks is like it incapacitates your party members. So
it
like
can destroy your armor.
Yes,
if you get hit by it and it does enough damage, you have to replace that armor when you survive. Yeah.
Wow.
It's so funny.
That is the deep cut of this movie.
It was really good.
They referenced
the
gelatinous cube multiple times.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of the joke. You know what's great about this movie too
for those wanting to look it up, it's not under cube or gelatinous in the monster manual. It's under oozes. So look for the section in oozes.
Oh, thank you.
Gelatinous cube is in there. Black pudding was referenced. We looked it up last night, and black pudding, we used to fight that too. Oh my God, it was so hard. Black pudding is one of the oozes in the oozes section.
I don't know. I don't know what black pudding is, but that's
very bad.
That's awesome.
Put it into your campaign, Patrick. Like, black pudding.
Everybody like jokes about, you know, like you imagine when you play Dungeons and Dragons, you fight the goblins, you fight the evil wizard, you fight the dragon, but oh, you turn a corner and there's a giant green cube that'll fuck you up.
Does it have so it's a monster. Does it have like an animus? Does it have like a personality? Do you interact with it on like
a force of nature? It's a force of nature.
But it's a conscious thing. I mean, it has sense, but it doesn't communicate.
Its only goal is to eat you.
Yeah.
Okay.
It wants to.
Like all living things, it just wants to survive, and how it survives is consume.
Consuming.
Would Joe Exotic want to keep it as a pet?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, there it is.
And then he sticks his arm in it, and his arm gets dissolved.
He doesn't stick his arm in it. He has a keeper.
One of his keepers.
Joe Exotic is too busy making videos about, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Having his own TV
thing. Oh my God.
So
anyway, onward. The references, I loved all of that. The fact that they, I love the fact that they go to the Manticore's restaurant, which is like the tavern, the dark and dingy tavern where you can get instructions and the map to go find the treasure.
You always got to go to the tavern, and the tavern owner knows about all the
that's right.
The rumors.
Someone who has a connection to a map.
I loved all of that.
Restaurant. Yeah.
It was hilarious. Yeah.
It was pretty
cool. Well, that's the most interesting part is like the little tidbits of like when he's like standing on the old shrine that has the Phoenix Gem, the cops are saying, oh, the history buff is back. And I love that it's not like he's not like this freakazoid. He is a freakazoid, but he's not the freakazoid who's just really into D&D. He's a history buff.
Right.
Like, And it's like little stuff like that that like kind of tweaks your brain. It's like, in this universe, this used to happen. There in our universe, there's never dragons, there's never goblins, and so it's just, you're just a weirdo who likes fantasy. But in this universe, you're a person that loves history.
Right.
You know? And,
I thought that was great.
Really, really kind of like interesting idea. And I want there to be more of these. Like, obviously, because, you know, I'm a geeky person. And I love fantasy movies. Plus, like, Chris Pratt is like, you know, I love his voice work. I love Tom Holland's voice work.
It's, you guys are talking about the references so much. I mean, it definitely has the quest tropiness. It definitely has all of that, which is fun.
Right.
It's a really well done Pixar movie. I don't think it's nearly in the top tier of Pixar.
I agree.
It's not a movie that you can rewatch, you know, 5 or 10 times and get something new out of
it. I would say that's true.
It appealed to me. I mean, beyond the I'm a fantasy guy too, and I didn't have the D&D, you know, references kind of twinges that you guys got. I enjoyed it on multiple levels, and also because it's a story about two brothers and not reconciling so much, but like coming to understand each other a little bit better. So as a brother of brothers, that part of the story really resonated with me. So it's not going to be in the normal kind of like, I can watch this movie all the time. Pixar movies. Like you can watch The Incredibles all the time, and it's always as entertaining as it was the first time, I think. So it won't go to that level, but it's definitely, an entertaining watch. It's worth it.
So Hannah and I yesterday were watching, and this is sort of like, we were watching random Pixar movies because we had just watched Onward. So she watched Coco, which she hadn't seen.
Oh my God.
And then we watched,
Coco is definitely Coco far is, more emotionally resonant for me.
Coco is really good, but I would watch Onward over Coco. Like I really, the music in Coco is so good. And then we watched Monsters, Inc. But I was talking to her about, the animation over the past few years, and the big improvement for me that I've noticed for the Pixar movies is the lighting has gotten so much better.
Oh yeah.
Like the light in these movies and you can really see it in Coco, and you can really see it in Onward, and you really can see it in like Toy Story 4. They really like dialed in their control of like things having a glow, and they have like more of a space between them, and like the light coming through windows and like reflecting off of stuff, like reflecting off of shirts and like the glow of a lamp. And it's like subtle.
Yeah, the technology always is advancing. I mean,
you can really see the difference. And especially with like Monsters, Inc., like the textures and the lighting look kind of flat, and it still looks good, but like compared to where we're at now, you can really see like how they've improved. It's really cool. And we're going to watch Monsters University.
If you guys want to revisit a Disney movie that I think is, you know, overlooked, kind of like it should not be because of how good it is, you guys should rewatch Tangled.
Oh, yeah.
Tangled is a fantastic animated movie from Disney. It's not Pixar, but it is wonderful.
It was one of the first Disney movies that they were doing their own,
when they actually made the switch from hand-drawn to
they had done
where they had their own kind of computer animation studio. But you get the songs are really good, the story is very simple, but at the same time it's got like a quest element to it. I really like Tangled, and if you haven't watched it in a few years, watch it again, because it is funny. The songs are good. Anyway,
that's my
commercial for Tangled.
I feel like there's a lot of like really a lot of similarities between Tangled and Frozen. Like
there's not as many as you'd think, dude.
Really?
I think that's not an unfair association, but I just think it's a little bit inaccurate. I think that if you watch Tangled, the themes that are highlighted in that movie are very different than the themes that are focused on in Frozen.
I see.
Anyway,
I'll give it a watch. I've only seen it once. Yeah, rewatch. So this brings up the question for me, like, what are your favorite Pixar movies or Disney animated movies, like, that people can watch right now with Disney Plus? Like,
well, I mean, let's go. I think you have to differentiate between, like, classic hand drawn animation and, like, the newer, more modern stuff.
Yeah, give me both.
Okay, hand drawn animation, I always go back to Beauty and the Beast. We watched Little Mermaid recently too, and that is a really entertaining film. Rewatch some of the classic Disney where they were, like, inventing animation.
I'm a Robin Hood guy.
Oh God,
Robin yes. Hood, Robin
so good.
I think that's my favorite hand drawn Disney animated movie.
Yeah,
I mean, that's really good.
And the Beast is stunningly beautiful.
Yeah.
But I always, whenever I'm on Disney Plus and we're searching for something to watch and I land on and I see Robin Hood, it's like, dude, let's watch Robin Hood, because I can watch segments of that all the time. I love the music of that.
I haven't rewatched it since I got Disney Plus. I think I should
rewatch it.
Robin Hood's good.
Yeah.
Give yourself and watch Sleeping Beauty. It's so simple. Sleeping Beauty is great.
You bring up a really good point, Andrew, that there's kind of a difference between, I feel like the Disney had kind of a drop in quality in, like, the 80s and early 90s, and then they got a resurge with, like, Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid.
Correct, but your timeline's off. Little Mermaid actually came out in 1989.
Came out in 1989. So towards Aladdin. The end of the 80s, they started to get their shit. Like, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, Little Mermaid and Lion King
were all in the span of, like, 5-6 years.
Which is incredible. And those are, like, the best, like,
some of the best animated movies ever.
Yeah. And then the stuff in the 80s, the lull in the 80s, like Oliver and Company, and even people have fond memories of, like, Rescuers and, like, 101 Dalmatians, but those are not anywhere compared to, like, some of the classic Disney stuff. I'm about to, like, contradict myself, but I really love Sword in the Stone.
Sword in the Stone's great
too. I loved Sword in the Stone when I was a kid. But of, like, those early 90s ones, I would say Aladdin is always the one that, like, really stuck out to me. But, like, Pixar movies, I love Wall-E. Wall-E's my favorite. And I know that
I have not watched Wall-E one time since I saw it in the theater. I have no desire to watch that movie.
It's profound, dude.
It's profound.
I don't disagree with that. I just don't think that, for me, it doesn't have rewatchability. That's all.
I was talking to Hannah about this yesterday. It's what you need to show somebody when you talk about show don't tell, because there's literally no there's, like, hardly any dialogue for 30 minutes. Like, well, there's no conversation. It's just silence. But they tell you so much in the first 30 minutes.
It's always when that comes up, show don't tell, that like storytelling maxim. That always makes me think of the episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer where the whole town loses their voices.
Oh, yeah.
And there's about 30 minutes. Yeah, Hush. Which the only Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode ever to be nominated for an Emmy for writing.
Yeah.
Which is absurd. But Joss Whedon, you know, he challenged himself to write an episode with very little dialogue. And there's about 30 minutes of that episode of television where nobody talks.
I think that Buffy the Vampire Slayer is on Hulu, so if you have Hulu right now, you could watch that. If you're looking for bingeable things,
Buffy the Vampire Slayer is very, get through the rough patch of season six.
Season six of Buffy the Vampire Slayer
is a little rough,
and there are multiple episodes in season one that do not hold up.
That do not hold up, absolutely. But only 13 of them, though.
You gotta watch that. Watch it from the beginning. It's an incredible show.
Mm-hmm, it's an incredible show. But seasons 2, 3, and 4 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer are incredible television.
Yep. I was watching one of your favorites, Andrew, Movies with Mikey, where he was talking about Serenity.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the weird fandom of how this show that got canceled got made into a movie. And like it's like this really interesting like zeitgeist of like this.
Yeah, you've gotten failed TV shows don't get made into movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Successful television shows get made into movies.
Exactly. And it's really interesting that the fandom surrounding this like made this get made, and like they push for it. And there's people who were, I mean, there was only like 12 episodes that actually aired. There's 15 or 14 episodes, depending on
there's 14.
And there's such a fandom, like whenever we would go to cons, we'd see that hat. We'd see people wearing like the what is it? Blue Sun t-shirts, Black
Blue
Sun?
Sun t-shirt, Blue Sun.
Yeah, Blue Sun. Black Sun's from Mass Effect, sorry. Yeah. And then
there's a booth.
Brown coats. Yeah. But like for 13 episodes of a canceled TV show, like that, it's really interesting to think about fandom like that in our time. And I don't know. Sorry for taking us on this tangent, but
no, it's okay. I mean,
Veronica Mars is the same kind of thing,
right? This fandom that surrounded canceled it
prematurely, and then. Yeah. At the time, it was the number one all-time Kickstarter for a project. Project.
How many seasons did that go, Veronica Mars? It went like two or three, didn't it?
Three.
Yeah. Like three. Yeah. It ended on a cliffhanger. Like they canceled it.
Yep.
As in season three was absolutely a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. So
it was the election. It was the election. Sheriff. Yeah.
Don't tell anybody. But I've never seen. I never watched. Like consistently original series Star Trek, and so
Gen is my series.
It was before my time, and I never really watched it because it was always kind of like dated and campy.
You really should.
Well,
the cliches.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm rewatching. I'm in the middle of season one. Yeah, it's real bad. here's what I'll say though. Kirk is awesome. Spock is the best character
of all
this show. He is so awesome.
One of the he's top five sci-fi characters of all time.
He is so good
across all genre.
Yeah,
dude, he's incredible.
Spock is so good, and I always watch the movies. I saw all the movies, and I've seen Leonard Nimoy through the years, but I never really like got it. And now that I'm watching the series, and like Spock is just always there, and just such a. And here's what I'll say, and you know I don't want to hark on the modern Star Trek too much because we've been doing that for weeks, but like they solve everything with science and discussion and peaceful and by peaceful
that
means.
That was the whole point.
That was the
of
whole
Roddenberry's
point.
Original vision.
Yes, yep. They don't want to fight. They never want to kill anybody. They don't ever want.
We understand.
They never, it's so brilliant and so much fun to watch, even though it's campy and old, and the sets are funky and the it's cheap. I've been watching like documentaries on YouTube about it where they're like talking about how like is the cheapest, most expensive show ever made. Like they were always struggling to like keep it afloat.
Yeah.
For seasons, and it did get canceled after season three, and it got moved to like Fridays in season three, but then it had this cult following. It had this like Star Trek, they had like conventions, and they had this fan base that was like, at the time there's no internet, but they had this fan base that was like calling into the studio to get it to so that's why they made movies out of them and stuff. It's really interesting. It's really interesting. Like time.
The story of
history.
Star Trek is quite an interesting situation.
Well, Star Trek, the motion picture got made because Star Wars was such a big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a direct tie.
Yeah. Oh, Paramount had this, you know, very valuable science fiction property. Yeah, and they're like, let's make a movie.
And, and the fandom had stayed. Yep. And so sci-fi was hot. Let's do Star Trek, the motion picture. That's exactly what happened.
Well, and then we've talked about Star Trek, the motion picture on this podcast, where it's sort of like the slower, more methodical, like and it's kind of the boring version. And then, you know, Wrath of Khan is arguably the greatest Star Trek movie.
But they solve everything with violence in Wrath of Khan.
They solve everything with violence. And it's like
the motion picture was directly connected to all the ideas that Roddenberry was trying to do. They don't solve anything with violence. They solve it with
science ideas. And ideas. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. It's very, no, Star Trek, the motion picture, the first one is very thoughtful. It's very talky. It's, you know, considerate, but it is, it's a long extended episode of the television show.
Yep.
And that just taking a 42 minute or 45 minute TV show and then turning it into a 2 hour movie, even if the some of the special effects look fantastic, it just doesn't necessarily translate into what the expect. And I think we experienced this even a little bit with Blade Runner 2049.
Mm.
That movie is 2 hours and 45 minutes. There are little snippets of action, but it is very contemplative science fiction with long scenes of dialogue, long scenes of long shots going into these landscapes and everything else. And it works on us, but it's not necessarily the most pop culture friendly science fiction that's ever been made.
Well, and the references that I read when that movie came out was like, it's too long and it's not for everybody, but like, fuck if that movie's not amazing, you know,
amazing.
It's beautiful. And yeah.
I'm adding that to my list of quarantine binge watch. I'm going to watch original Blade Runner and then the second one.
That's not a bad
term. The final cut is on Netflix right now.
I own it. I own it.
Oh yeah. No, I'm just on Amazon. Cool. Yeah. For our viewing audience who can't find it anywhere else, if they want to watch
the definitive cut,
we shouldn't call it the definitive cut, cause there's actually been a definitive cut and then the final cut. So Blade Runner, the final cut, Ridley Scott's purest version, I guess. That's
the one to watch. Yeah.
That's the one to watch. The one that's on Netflix right now.
Ridley Scott, like, cannot make up his mind about cuts. Like, he has so many versions. He argues with, like, the studio or something to no end.
We talked about this before. We don't have to deep dive into how Ridley Scott does director's cuts.
This debate, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's. Well,
hold on a second. Let's focus this back down, because we were talking about fantasy tropey stuff, and we were talking about D&D. We were talking about Onward.
Pixar movies.
Christopher, you've been playing a board game with Sean over Skype or whatever.
Yeah. Tell us about your experience. That was part of a
Kickstarter too. You guys got involved with for Gloomhaven. What's happening?
Gloomhaven. Yes, Sean and I are playing over the phone.
Yeah.
I did the Kickstarter, Sean, and that immediately sold out. It's a hugely hot game, and I brought the saga of this is that it's a fantasy tabletop game, super hot. Kickstarter was super hot. It's in the gaming community, unbelievably worshipped, right, as an incredible game, and it comes in an appalling box that's huge. It has, you know, 1,000 pieces.
Holy shit.
It's not dice-based. It's card-based. You go on a campaign. There are characters. And then as you work your way through the campaign, you can retire characters. And then new characters who have new abilities and all of that you get access to them so that you can play them as well. But it's variations on sort of the fantasy tropey characters and monsters, right?
Where does the title Gloomhaven come from?
Gloomhaven is the name of the city that you are is the base of your operations.
Ah, okay.
It's also kind of a Gotham horror fantasy too, right? It's not like high fantasy. There's like, it's like murder and gore, right?
Not a lot of gore. But it's less Lord of the Rings fantasy and more, a little bit more edgy,
like Cthulhu type.
There might be some later on in the campaign where you run into some of that, but it's not the setting sort of feel at all. It's not Cthulhu, yeah. It's much more straightforward. Fight monsters. There is a overarching major story arc that we're dealing with right now, but then you finish that and it opens up other sort of major story arc. So, okay.
Is this a game where you can complete the main campaign / quest in one sitting?
Oh, God. No.
You know, no. Okay, so no.
So let me describe to you, Sean and I, we've been, so I bought the game. I brought it with me to Colorado on one of our holiday trips. The game is, I think, three years, maybe four now.
Okay,
yeah.
And I bought it, and I brought it with me to Colorado, and we set it up so that I didn't want to play by myself. I didn't have anyone else to play with here, and so I hadn't even played.
Yeah.
But Sean is, you know, Sean is my brother from another mother, right? So yes. I brought it with me because I knew he would be
Legendary listener.
All-time yes. friend of the podcast.
So all-time. And so I brought it with me and we set it up and it's hilarious. It took us multiple hours just to set up our first campaign, right?
Wow.
And that's so intense. And then we played and of course he's immediately hooked. I brought it again in another trip and we played, we continued the campaign that we had started the first time.
Wow.
And then he decided, okay, I'm going to buy it for myself. And so he bought it for himself. And so we are currently, when we find the time, right?
Yeah.
We call each other. We have identical boards set up. So we are playing the campaign together over the phone. Where he is running two characters, I am running two characters. Our party is a party of four.
Yeah,
he runs two, I run two, and we have identical setups, and we play over the phone on weekends typically. And here's why it's on weekends, and why I laughed at your idea yeah. about playing through the campaign in one sitting. Sean and I, I think the number of scenarios or encounters that you can do in the core game is 90 plus around Holy, that.
Okay.
And last week he and I played for almost four hours.
Oh my God.
On one dungeon.
Wow.
Awesome.
Wow. It is so fun.
It is so fun. And we have such a good time. It's hilarious. Like
where is this game board? I assume it's a game board. It's got a game board. Where is this set up in your house?
It's in the garage casita.
It's in
permanently the casita. Set up. It's permanently set up in there because it takes up so much space.
When quarantine ends and I come down to Tucson for a long weekend, I have to sleep under the game board. Essentially is what you're saying.
Yeah,
basically. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
You are second to Gloomhaven.
That's no question. The priorities are Gloomhaven, Andrew. Well, Andrew might be below my freezer and the camping stuff. Gloomhaven takes priority.
Okay, so here's the question that I have for you, Christopher. I've been seeing ads for Frosthaven. This is the sequel that they've announced.
Shh, yes. I've already kickstarted it, yes.
It's awesome. Like
Sean has.
How
to.
Can they have a Sean? Sequel Sean has to a game that is that doesn't apparently have an end.
Oh, it has an end.
You can play 90 permutations of it.
It has an end. But Frosthaven doesn't come out until spring of 21.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty of time.
Yeah. If it comes out, like everything's pushed back. So who knows if.
But yes, we were all over Frosthaven the day that it was started on Kickstarter. Awesome. Yeah.
But this is a pretty expensive board game, right? I mean, it was.
Yes.
It's not something you buy for $50.
Right. I played, what was that one? Science fiction game that I played, and that was pretty expensive. That was like $250 for that.
Warhammer? Is that the way you're talking about?
No. Maybe I'll figure it out. But
one of the levels for Frosthaven and Gloomhaven are in that range, but it's not that. In order to get the core game, which again, the core game is literally probably hundreds of hours of gameplay.
Yeah.
The core game is $100.
That's not bad.
Yeah. It's worth. Yeah. That's why I'm like, when we cut you, that's part of my critique of all fandom, really. When I think about the fact that, like, you know, people bitch about video games and shit like that. Like, it's the worst game I've ever played. It's this, it's that. You know, I hate it. Da, da, da. And I'm like, you spent $50, $60 on this game. How many hours did you play? And how many hours were actually enjoyable?
Right.
Yeah.
And then you weigh that versus you go to a movie for $12. It costs, it's an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible. And you didn't laugh once. You didn't have a good time. Do you, you know, weighing your value of your time versus that.
Yep.
That is absolutely the time versus value on that is awesome. Enjoyment value.
If I get 20 hours of enjoyment out of a $60 game, I feel like that's probably worth it. Like
the fact that like people bitch about, you know, they find anything to bitch about, but they're bitching about a free game like Warzone or Fortnite where it's like, dude, you literally download it for free. You can play for free.
Yeah.
And if you get 1 hour of enjoyment out of a free game, you already are ahead.
Well, nice segue, Andrew. You've been playing Warzone. The three of us are playing Warzone. I am less committed than the two of you are, but like, would you like to talk about? It's just sort of like a fun pick up and play game, and that's why you guys it.
I've never played a battle royale before in
me
my
either.
Life.
Me either. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We are not. Yeah. That is not the type of game that attracts, I think, any of the three of us.
Yeah. No.
But for whatever reason, Warzone dropped right at the beginning of kind of quarantine, or right as quarantine was really starting to heat up, and we all downloaded it. Chris has kind of had the bug bitten on him far more than the rest of us.
He's been pushing us to play with him.
I mean, I play solos almost every day.
Yeah.
Just because it's fun. You literally log on and you can play for, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes, 2 hours. And you might play 4 or 5 battle royale matches, and having a Warzone victory is—I have not had one yet in probably the 20 or 30 matches I've played. So it's extremely hard to quote unquote win, but every game is fun. Every match that you play is fun, and it's frustrating, and it's hard, and there's so much to learn about how to be good at the game. Mm-hmm. But I have not had an experience in the game that I didn't think was at least somewhat fun. And I've dropped into games where I am like the second or third person eliminated. Like the game lasts like 2 minutes because I encounter someone and I get smoked right away.
Yep.
You get one life and you get maybe two if you survive your gulag. But
the wrinkle mechanic is when you're first downed in the map, you get sent to the gulag, and that you get a chance to fight your way back into the the city.
Do other battle royales do that, or is that unique to this game?
No, I think it's unique to this game.
I think it's really interesting because, like, I mean, that's been always kind of my big problem is like you get one life and then you get smoked right away, and it's like, okay, move on to the next one. It's just sort of like I have no commitment to it. Like, you know, it's like at least you get a second shot. Yeah.
It's still an unforgiving situation because the gulag lasts at most 20 seconds.
Yeah.
You're dropped in. You have no choice but to fight this person.
Right.
Because they're coming after you. I mean, I'm very aggressive in the gulag. My gulags never go to overtime just because that's my play style. It's still an unforgiving situation, even if it does provide you an opportunity to get back to the match if you win your gulag. But it's still punishing because it's tense.
It is tense.
You have no choice but to engage this person. That's the main flaw sometimes with battle royale game types is you can win the game without engaging people the entire time.
You don't like the camper. I think there's a strategy of you need to find
a strategic thing. I enjoy gunfights. So
well, you should also like. I mean, I feel like there's been a couple of times where you've gotten smoked right in front of me because you run out of cover because you're impatient. You know, it's like,
we've talked about this. Impatience kills.
Totally does.
Most of my deaths are because I'm impatient.
Yeah.
We definitely have to learn. I especially have to learn how to play better as a team, I think, for us to have more success.
Yeah.
And I completely own that. I am an aggressive game player. Impatience kills 100%. In Warzone. So, but I've had a great time playing by myself and so playing fun. With you guys on squads. It's so fun.
I've been playing that a little bit with you. I've gone back to Skyrim and been playing Skyrim a little bit in the quarantine time. But we're running a little long, so I think I'll save my D&D discussion for next time. But,
save my Gloomhaven update for next time.
Yeah, cool. More Gloomhaven. I would like to hear more details about this.
I can talk about that for the entirety of the podcast.
Okay. Great.
We should have legendary listener Sean on when we do a Gloomhaven
session. I would love that.
We haven't talked to Sean on the podcast in at least a year.
Tell him he's invited for next Sunday at 10 a.m.
Next Sunday, yeah.
Yeah,
let's do it. So, Andrew, do you have any trivia for us?
I do, and it's Warzone themed.
Woo! Okay.
It's simple enough, just because I think it's fun to highlight these type of things. Plus or minus a million, how many total players have played Warzone since launch?
Oh my gosh.
The number I saw was 30 million.
Whoa. I was going to say 28. So that's the first number that came to mind.
Christopher is absolutely correct. Since launch, this is from codtracker.gg / Warzone. 30 million players have played Warzone.
I don't know numbers of like Fortnite or like Apex Legends, who are the other two.
It's right on the level with Fortnite. That's highlighted.
Really?
Because Fortnite level of players.
Fortnite is like is become very popular because it's very, very much less violent and less serious and cartoony, I would say. And so like kids are playing it and less, you know, it's not as, this is surprising because it is a realistic looking shooter.
It is a realistic shooter. Yeah.
I have to be honest. I was never a big fan, but for whatever reason, I love shooters, but it's always, I'm okay with killing aliens. I don't like the concept of killing representatives of other human beings. Right.
Yeah. But
for whatever reason, the game is feeding some part of my brain that needs it right now. And so, it's really got its hooks into me.
I've never been a Call of Duty guy either. I honestly think their fandom is a little toxic sometimes too.
It is for sure. A lot of the dumbass Trump regiment.
A lot of the kind of like meat eating.
Right.
Kind of the
bros.
Call of Duty.
Yeah, dude bro gamers love Call of Duty. Honestly, like the first couple Modern Warfare games are some of the best storytelling shooters that I've ever played.
The first Modern Warfare on Xbox 360.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a really fun campaign.
It is incredible. It was an action movie shooter.
Absolutely.
You were an action hero.
I've never played a single one of the.
They just gave a remaster version for the one. And it looks incredible. So if you're thinking about getting
the original
that story is so good. It's so good. Is
great. You play.
I'd have to check that out.
You play both sides of essentially. You play both sides of a world war. Essentially, it's pretty. It's an interesting campaign.
That first one is so intense, especially, there are some really cool maps and really, really interesting, ideas about warfare.
It's fun. So, it's a fun game to play on campaign for sure.
I'm with you though, Andrew. It's like, I'm always of the, I want fantasy, I want science fiction. I don't want to be.
I want the power fantasy of the video game for sure.
Yep, me too.
Right,
yep.
right. All right. Well, thank you, Andrew, for your trivia. Good job, Christopher. If you'd like to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. You should email the podcast, brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek@twitter.com. Brothers Geek Podcast on Facebook, Spotify, Brothers Geek.
Brothers Geek Do Stuff on Instagram.
Yeah, Brothers Geek do stuff. iTunes, Brothers Geek Podcast. Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah,
enjoy your Sunday. Enjoy. Stay home, stay safe.
Stay home, stay safe.
Stay home, stay safe.